Time's up. Let's do this.
We're in for a wild night.
Welcome, welcome, welcome everyone to episode 195 of Born to be Wild, a wild and wild adjacent Hearthstone podcast where we have fun hanging out with friends, talking about the wild and wild adjacent formats of Hearthstone, spotlighting members of the wild community, and counting with our fingers. I'm your host, Electric Sheep City. It is great to be back on this beautiful Friday evening here in cool Colorado. Hydralisk is out this week, so I'm just joined by one of your favorite people and mine, Shmoopy Daddy! Shmoopy Daddy, how you doing?
I'm doing okay. You know, like, you threw me for a loop there. You gave me a really big number, and, like, I have my socks on, so anything larger than 10 is really tough to count to. This is why you just don't count, right? You just don't count, go face. Very happy to be back contributing to the show and here at a springy New York, Orange County, because I got some spring onions today out of my yard and they were tasty and spicy. And they don't make me count big numbers. So what's on the docket, Sheep?
Absolutely. So for those of you joining us for the first time, welcome aboard. Let me briefly explain how this show works. We record this podcast live every Friday evening at twitch.tv/borntobewildhs. And the video version of this podcast is then posted to YouTube shortly thereafter. Audio versions are also distributed to all the podcast apps. So however you are watching, listening, or absorbing via osmosis this podcast today, thank you. Yes. You.
You. Content plug, Shmoopy Daddy. Before we get into the main topic of the show, I'd like to say a quick thank you to Shakunin and the other players, patrons of our show. Your support means the world to us. If you enjoy this content, please like, subscribe, and comment on this video on YouTube. Another simple way is to support the show is to leave a review on iTunes, Spotify, Google Podcasts, or your podcast platform of choice. If you're watching live on Twitch, you've got some awesome emotes that you can unlock by subscribing to the channel. This is free if you use Amazon Prime. There are also emotes you can unlock completely free just by following. Born to be Wild merch. Picture of my wife. There's a link to the shop from our main website. Our main website is www.of.borntobewildhs.com. Why did you spell it out all the way that cheap? You know I will read anything on the prompter. Finally, if you'd like to show support financially, you can join our Patreon for as little as $1 per month. We have a few channels in the Discord that are unlocked by subscribing to Patreon, where you can see the show coming together each week. Check it out. If you'd like to interact with us personally, please join our Discord, a free and amazing online community of friends from all across the world who love talking about Wild Hearthstone. Links to all this stuff can be found more at our website, which is www.borntobewildhs.com. Sheep, how's your week?
Yeah, my week was pretty kicking rad. So I hit Legend and Twist on Sunday. I had a paper due on Sunday, and so I was, you know, queuing Twist on one side, working on paper and research on the other. Twist queues are really good for that thing. After you hit Legend, before you hit Legend, you end up playing more Twist. I found that out the hard way. So I did that with Murloc Paladin on Un'Goro Day. So that was the Vilefin Inquisitor. That was the Hydrologist. Of course, yeah, Bluegill. And
that was pretty good.
That was a fun deck. Yeah, I enjoyed it a lot. And of course, I'm drawing a blank on the card's title because I started thinking about it. The 6 mana spell that does the buff and with the Death Rattle. That's the one. Thank you.
That's the one.
Mm-hmm. Spikeridge Steed. Surprisingly good if you run into aggro. Surprisingly, actually pretty good if you're playing against Taunt Warrior, because you just have an additional body that they can't just push the button and deal 8 damage to your face. Good card. Yeah. We crafted some theories. We were invited to the theory crafting stream. So a little more on that later. A lot more on that later. I did the grad school thing. So like I said, I had the paper due on Sunday. Actually, I've already got my result back on that one. I got 100% on that one, which was good. Thank you. The last one, I got my lowest grade in all of grad school so far, but my parents were in town, and so I just didn't cite enough sources, apparently. So this time, it wasn't actually a paper. It was a presentation, so PowerPoint presentation, essentially. But, you know, you have to have your script for a presentation along with it. And so I had 3 full slides chock full of references this time. So since I got like an 80 something because I didn't have enough references last time, I did not make that mistake this week.
Just spraying and praying references. This has the word "the." We must say where this is from.
Then we had a few snow days, which meant that my wife didn't have to work. And I got to work from home. So while I didn't get to spend as much time with the baby, even though he was also at home, you know, I still got to, at the very least, like not have to commute, which is nice. Very nice.
That's cool.
That was my week. Shmoopy Daddy, how was your week?
My week was good. I always give a Shmoopy update. As far as the week goes, we kept him home a couple days because he had a little bit of a fever. But like, usually when he's sick, he's almost easier to watch because he doesn't have the energy to get into trouble. So he just sort of hung out and played Mario on the Switch. So he probably loved it. But you know, he was okay the other 2 days that we went. He broke his board at martial arts, so he's a yellow belt now. So that was pretty cool. Yeah, he's doing well. He's doing well. Yeah, he did one of those. Hammer fist strikes. Yeah. Nice job, Bubba Doo. Nice job. Hearthstone wise, this week was weird. This week was weird because, like, again, we're being who we are, privileged to be in the creator program. We kind of see stuff coming early. And so by the end of the show last week, we knew what the reverts were going to be. And then, like, you're waiting all weekend. You can't tell anybody because you'll be sent to Blizzard jail, and then real jail. But first, Blizzard jail. And so we're waiting. We're waiting to be able to talk about the reverts. And then the reverts hit, and I had forgotten how much fun that time of year was. And we'll go into more detail about, you know, the general community reaction to the reverts. But just my I only had a couple streams this week. It felt like because. Again, we had the theory crafting on Wednesday, which was awesome to be a part of. Never been a part of a big old Blizzard sanction event like that before. So that was really cool and really eye opening and very poggers, as the Zoomers would say in the chat. And so I super enjoyed that. But I really enjoyed my streams this week because it was mostly people sending in like, well, I don't know. Let's just send in jank because like Renathal's reverted, and let's just let her rip. And I'm sort of sitting there at like diamond 10 and diamond 5, and I'm playing stuff like, you know, Quest Naga Mage, and I'm playing like all sorts of Death Knight. Like I'd forgotten how much stuff in Death Knight had been reverted to make it like a little bit more relevant and wild and playable. Mm-hmm. And playing like big old Renathal, Reno piles of Death Knight and Frost Death Knight and all kinds of Death Knight and just sort of goofing off. And I really enjoyed the streams this week because like we did some winning, we did some losing, but it was very fun. It was very low stress and it was very fun. So that's pretty much, I think, a decent summary of my week. Outside of that, because I mean that's all the wild news. I'm pushing for Standard Legend with Frost DK. And that feels very strong. That feels very direct. That feels very like, I don't know if it's under, I don't see it a lot. Usually when I play against DK, it's all like plague DKs and I'm kind of smoking them. Mm-hmm. But like
are you going pure frost or are you going like UFU or FFU?
No, pure frost. Pure frost.
Oh, cool.
No, I have so many screenshots of, cause I'm also playing, was it Lady Death Whisper? Mm-hmm. So, like, I have so many screenshots of just, like, oh, look at this hand of, like, four Glacial Advances and four Frostworm Furies. Surely my opponent will get to interact with me this turn. And that's, I had forgotten how much I loved Glacial Advance and how crestfallen I was when I'd gotten nerfed. But again, we can go into reverts later, but like these aren't really like wild relevant reverts. They're just toys that I had missed. And so I got my toys back and I'm really enjoying a standard climb right now where I'm basically just smorking idiots who threw 40 cards in their deck and like don't have any consistency to defend against me. So that's pretty sick. With that sort of put a cap on it. Oh yeah, I'm in space now. I changed the lighting in my room, so I'm in space now. People keep saying I need oxygen, but I think it's optional at this point. As I've stated previously before we started recording this, I play so much wild now I don't need oxygen. I can't do any further brain damage. What's the news, sheep?
Welcome to the news. The news is so good.
And the news is pretty good. Yeah, so of course, before we move on to the unanticipated parts of the news, we do have the Dynamic Twist rollout. So, of course, mentioned Un'Goro. We also had Frozen Throne. So we got Death Knights back, Kobolds and Catacombs, the Witchwood, so Odd and Even, the Boomsday Project.
I hear
Blank Day. I put Rastakhan's Rumble there, but I'm not sure what that's all
what
about.
Is that?
I don't know.
I hear right now where we are in Hearthstone history. It's a Hearthstone history with a 4-mana Mech Warper and Cobalt and Cabal Lackey only gets you a 1-mana secret instead of a 0-mana secret, and it's just all Starliner and Tog Druid Mirrors, which sounds like my living hell, but somebody loves it. That's fun for someone. And surely it will change in the coming days because we've got some high-powered sets coming up next week.
Oh, yeah. Starting, tomorrow with Rise of Shadows and then Saviors of Old Doom on Sunday. Some dragons, Galakrond's Awakening. Then we finally get new class! Ashes of Outland in the Demon Initiate set. That's Wednesday. Scholomance
is going to crack it open in half. Secret Passage comes to Rogue.
It's
Polkelt.
Madness at the Dark Moon Fair. That's this time next week. That's my birthday.
Nice.
Forged in the Barrens. United in Stormwind.
Yeah, Stormwind. Yeah, Stormwind's gross.
Complete game changer. And one of the things that has been reverted, since we probably won't talk about it in, the nerf revert section of the news, is Nelly. So we actually will be able to play like Nelly in our Pirate Warrior, which we probably won't anyway.
Play, but you know what? We'll.
But we could.
We could. We will try. Yeah, we'll try. Surely we'll try. I was just thinking, like, Dark Moon Fair. So I came on just before Dark Moon Fair, I think. Mm-hmm. That was my episode. And, like, looking back on it now and the strength of that set and then how much the decks that were good then have been gutted, I'm really interested to see what that day feels like because Big Priest and Secret Mage were tier one.
They were.
They have both been summarily deleted since, so I'm very interested to see what is decent. If not those decks, what am I going to play? So, that's cool.
Excitement abounds. So, Twist continues to be really fun. I really like this journey through Hearthstone's history, and honestly, I typically hit Legend in all three formats, already hit it in Twist and Wild. Haven't gotten there as Standard yet. And honestly, I think I might end up doing it post Whizbang's Workshop.
Makes
especially
sense.
Maybe with one of the decks that we were playing that no one's talking about, but we went like between the two different versions, 6 and 1.
Oh yeah. Six and wait, yeah. 6 and 1?
Yeah.
Oh yeah, 6 and 1. Wow, yeah.
So speaking of, we went to that their theory crafting event. We prepped, I think, triple the number of decks we ended up actually being able to play. It just goes by so fast, and it always does, but it feels like this one in particular just went by like that.
We had a lot of like fun decks that we wanted to just keep playing, and so we'd play like 3 or 4 games with it, and then like, well, I guess we should try something else, and then that was fun, and we'd try 3 or 4 games with it.
Yeah, and not pictured here because HSR didn't capture it as well, was Whizbang. We played a few Whizbang games too. Tell me about the Warlock Whizbang that we got to play real quick.
Oh, God. All right. Yeah. So one of the feedbacks, I think, from content creators in general, having done the theory craft, was like Whizbang felt very uneven. There were some decks that felt like it was almost impossible to win with. You were basically playing with like a default deck that you get for free because you started the game, and like you're unlocking cards like from Warrior, and you're like, oh wow, I can add these to my deck now and improve it. And like some of them are at that level. And then there's Warlock. The Warlock Whizbang twist is there's only 20 cards left in the deck, but in the deck are a bunch of cards that sort of delete your deck. There's Fracking. There's the recently nerfed 4-mana 5/7. I forget what it's called. The one that deletes 3 cards at the bottom of your deck. That's good tempo. They had...
used to be a 7/7.
Yeah. Did we have... We didn't have Chamber in that deck, right? There was no... It was only standard...
I don't remember.
There was no Caverns of Time stuff. But there was like Nomi was in there. Niru was in there. The Niru's useless. I don't know why that's in there. I'm not like, you know, some people are like, oh, well, and then you play Niru. And I'm like, you've won already because you've got Phenatum in that deck. And that's the crazy thing is how quickly you get your Bristlebacks and your Phenatum online. We played, how many times did we roll Warlock? Once? Twice?
Just the once, I think.
Just the once. Opponent was dead on 5 to both board and what was in our hand.
Yes.
We had no cards. We'd played Phenatum for 0, and we had Nomi as backup. Like it was actually cracked. It would be, and I said this as feedback. It's my honest opinion. It would be a tier 1 wild deck. How overpowered it was. So if you plan on climbing with Whizbang, just simply be skilled and roll Warlock 34, 35 times. I don't think it's going to take many more games than that. You'll just have a 100% win rate and just roll with it.
Absolutely. That whole deck was just absurd in the best possible way. Gosh, and we started off the theory crafting event with like this really janky Evolve Shaman deck that I made. And I was like, oh, this is going to be like silly nonsense. And we queued into Trump SC, you know, the guy who essentially taught us all how to play Hearthstone with his Trump's teachings. And I'm like, okay, here's the mayor of Value Town. Like, what are we going to do? We proceed to high roll some evolves because we run the excavate package and we ran shutter block. And we didn't actually shutter block into our evolves, but that was perfectly fine because we high rolled. Gosh, what was the card?
Is that what it's called? Glowstone Grey Worm. It's a 3-mana 4/3. It's Death Rattle reads give your minions a random keyword, I believe. And so I said on stream, I'm just like, well, we're simply just going to like roll Wind Fury across the board. We didn't roll Wind Fury across the board. We rolled like 3 out of 5 or 4 out of 5 Wind Furies.
And that's again, almost exact lethal. Like it was perfect.
It was perfect. We even got an emote out of Trump, which was just excellent. That was just excellent. That was peak right there. I was just like, I don't know if we can top this, and we got 6 more hours to go.
So that deck only ended up going 50%. We played two games of it. It was fun, but we wanted to move on. So we moved on to a deck that you and I like collaboratively made throughout the day, which was what I'm calling Embiggen Warrior. And Embiggen Warrior, we played five games of, which is a high mark for the number of games that we played one of these decks for. We went 4-1 before we were like, I want to play more of this, but we just got to move on.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I forget what the elemental is called. It's using the 3/3 elemental. The only spell that we are playing in our deck was Black Rock and Roll. And since I said, you know, the idea that was kind of coming to my mind was just like, well, I mean, we've built a control warrior, but like, what if we build a deck that's like around Black Rock and Roll? We just do a bunch of minions. There's a lot of minions in the new set that like getting buffed. So let's buff them and then let's play them. And you did a beautiful job of just sort of filling it out because, you know, I'm just sort of teaching throughout the day. And I can pop on Discord every once in a while to add some ideas. But for the most part, like I can't get into the client. I can't build the deck. And mm-hmm. she built a wonderful curve with it. And with that first game, how big was the Ziliax we made? Was it like a 13, like 17 or something like that?
Yeah. So Black Rock and Roll, of course, adds the mana cost of your card to the stats. So our Ziliax was 9 mana, but it's discounted for every minion that's on board. So it got +9/+9 added, but then there were more than 9 total minions on board. So it was free. I think it was like a 13. Yeah.
You were playing them out. You're like, all right, well, here's a 6/6. Here's a 4/7. Here's this. And then let's play Ziliax.
For free.
And what was the best part? We had had all that attack, and then we gave it cleave.
Yep. There's that one. Was this even a new card? I don't even think it was. This one was new. It's from Titans.
Yeah. It was the magnetic mech that I've never used in anger.
It's been around for a while, and no reason to use it until now. Because we just tossed that on there, cleave. I think we healed for 4, but we could have healed for over 40.
Raxius did the math while she was watching the stream, and she said that we dealt a total of 72 damage with it. It was just disgusting. Just the opponent's board just disintegrated. And that was game one. And it was just like, okay, well, let's draw one of our three copies of Embiggen, which was the joke. It's just like, okay, so we run two tutors for the spell, and then we run the spell. And what's neat is, again, the tutor, that elemental, I think it's Steam something elemental.
Steam Guardian,
there you go. Draws the fire spell, which is Black Rock and Roll, and then discounts it down to 4. So, like, you play Steam Guardian on, well, we were doing, like, Rockstar on 1, Hero Power on 2, Steam Guardian on 3, Black Rock and Roll on 4, 5 drop on 5 because we were curving like gods because she built the deck beautifully that way. Then we were doing disgusting things on 6. Sometimes we would have the new Death Rattle weapon. And what's cool is you know, you equip the weapon. And I knew this beforehand, but like I hadn't gone through the sequences yet. And it's like you equip the weapon and you swing, and then the next turn, you've got the miniaturized weapon in your hand. So you can equip the mini weapon and then slap with the mini weapon and proc Death Rattle's, like, was a testing dummy that has, like, you know, sprays 8 damage amongst all enemy minions or all enemies, so it can go face 2. So, like, it was just disgusting. A lot of Theorycraft decks were just like, yeah, I don't know. I have no solutions for what you're doing right now. It was unreasonably fun.
Well, and we weren't sure how nesting golem, I think, yeah. So I don't remember the stats because, I mean,
it was an 8/7. Had it in big it's 4 mana, so 8/7. Much, yeah.
But its Death Rattles resummon it with -1/-1. So we thought, of course, we buffed it. It's going to have -1/-1 from that. No, it had -1/-1 from base stats. And we kept on meaning to take it out after the first game that we played with it.
But we didn't.
We never remembered. We still went 4-1.
you know what was wild though? And this was well, I mean, we're playing standard. But this was wild where we'd play Floppy Hydra, definitely the most high powered card in the deck. All right, mm-hmm. Absolutely. I'm not saying that with any facetiousness whatsoever. We'd play Floppy Hydra, that would have the boost from Black Rock and Roll. It would die, it would come back, it would have the stat buff counted from the Black Rock and Roll. So that was like a little like that. Nesting wasn't working, but Hydra was working, and maybe I should have put it in the bug section. I don't know, but it was that part was goofy to me as far as like, is this really working how it should?
But, the answer is yes.
Yes.
Maybe not how intended, but how it should.
Yes. Hydra was not floppy. Let's put that concept to rest. Hydra was not floppy.
He definitely went to the gym for maximum gains. That's for sure. Then we played three games of what I call Divine. So it was basically like a Divine Shield, like board buff deck, using a lot of the new cards. Of course, Theory Crafting, we have to have at least 10 new cards. Went 2-1 with that. It never felt OP, but it just kept on like getting there.
Stacking auras was cool. Stacking auras of the same kind was cool. So like you could get two Crusader's auras up, and that, and then you get two buffs in the same attack, and it's like, oh, okay, +4/+2 per attack. All right, fine.
And then especially once you stack that with the Shroomskivate, or in our format, what we can do, of course, is the Crab Rides again.
Yeah,
Crab Rider. Ride.
It's true.
So, I mean, that's already a thing. I'm already playing Crab Rider and Crusader's Aura in like Holy Wrath Paladin.
Sure.
Without even changing the deck, it can stack those buffs. So that'll be just wild.
Yeah, and ironically, I think like something to keep an eye out for even Paladin. Like it sounds like a meme. It's like, all right, Shmoopy, you're coping a little bit, but like at the same time, watch out, maybe. Uh-huh. And then we let you cook.
Yeah, and then we let me cook. And so Let Him Cook was an all spell, well, no minion, mage. And because of the restriction of the 10 new cards, in this case, all spells, there was the like 2-mana, like discover a secret, it costs 1 card. I didn't want to put that in my deck, especially in standard, like the secrets are just not really what I want. But because we had to have 10 of them. No, I don't think we played it once. We had it in our hand a couple times, but it was never worth. But that deck felt way stronger than I thought it was going to be.
Small discover pool. It was leaning hard on that. We were like against pizza playing Pirate Rogue. We were just like, okay, what we need right now is we need to discover a Flame Strike. And then we discover a Flame Strike. It's like, okay, he's done his thing. He's made a larger board. We need to discover a Flame Strike. So we discovered a Flame Strike. Like, it was just like, it's like not that like you were necessarily always going to be that consistent, but just like it's leaning hard on small discover pools. And whenever that's happening with like a casino mage type deck, it's on the border between like okay and toxic, I feel like. I don't know how you feel about that. I almost feel better playing it in Wild where it's like, okay, I can high roll, but there's a lot of bad options I could hit. It almost feels bad in standard when it's like kind of you're like pigeonholed into like, no, you're either getting this great option or you're getting this great option.
Yeah, I feel less degenerate doing that in Wild, but I mean, I feel like standard has got some options that probably will make it not feel like the best thing to do. So I don't think it'll be like too much of a problem. That said, we went 67%, so...
Yeah, it was silly. It was really silly.
Mm-hmm. And then, because we had two Death Knight decks, we didn't spend a ton of time with either one. And I really... I wanted to spend more time with both of them, but...
Yeah.
We just didn't have the time at this point. So, Anchorman submitted a buff deck. So it was 1 blood, 2 unholy. And we went 100% with that one. 1-0.
Ship it. Perfect deck. The new 4-mana Quill Bore feels like if you can buff that consistently, the one that sprays damage equal to its attack at the end of the turn, if you can buff that consistently, that is a card that is absolutely relevant and wild. Especially if you can do, I mean, it's an undead. You can do something silly like give it poison if you want to, and it's a DIY, you know, dread scale. So that's something to keep an eye on. For wild, for sure, as something that we can kind of goof around with and be okay with.
Yeah, and some of the buff cards are even rotating to our format. So standard won't have like the 3-mana buff your hand by what is it +2/+2 if you expend corpses. We're gonna have that though, so it may or may not be wild relevant right now. But if the archetype continues getting support, I can see it eventually being like a real wild deck. I don't think it's quite there yet, but it's getting more and more tools. Love to see it. Something that we then played, and I think we spent too much time on this one, but that's because we really wanted it to work, and it just didn't, was Pirate Rogue.
Yeah.
And I think in our format, it'll work a lot better because we're only really adding like two cards. We're going to be adding Boat. We're going to be adding a Treasure Distributor, right? Maybe Dig for Treasure. Honestly, probably not. Probably just those two.
That felt kind of weak to me. I don't know how you felt about like it was. Yeah, the whole standard pirate setup for play is completely different than what we're doing in Wild. In Wild, we're kind of just sort of hand dumping and going and getting damage in and facing and. Standard, like the best cards are set up. The best cards in that deck felt like a 5-drop with miniature eyes and what we were calling Pirate Santa, the pirate legendary. Because of like you could have these crazy combos where you get him down and then he's making, you know, copies of free Dread Corsairs that are going face and trading, and then like, you know, your weapon is making like 2/1/1s and they sometimes go face and like, I don't know, Sheep, how did you feel playing that deck? It felt like we were like either didn't have it built right, which was a little bit of A, and a little bit of B is we weren't quite playing it how we want to play it because it's not the pirate rogue we wanted.
And so I feel like it's both of those, but talking with some of my friends who were watching a few of the different standard streams throughout the day, they're in the European time slot, so they didn't get to catch ours, but they were watching them, you know, in the earlier shift, and they were like, Pirate Rogue didn't do too well, huh? I was like, no. And then they saw mine and she was like, no, your Pirate Rogue did about how I would have expected. Like I don't think it's a good deck in standard, obviously. Now this was just theory crafting has its own meta and its own restrictions, and more than anything else, time restriction. These are people who have, you know, been theorycrafting a deck for how long, and this is the first day people are getting to test it.
Sure.
Pirate Rogue may eventually become a thing and a strong thing in standard, but it wasn't here. That wasn't an experience unique to us, just because A, we were trying to build it like Pirate Rogue in our format, and then B, we were trying to play it like Pirate Rogue in our format. Yeah.
And I wonder, like, it did some powerful things, and I wonder if there's almost, like, going to be the situation that happens in Standard where you basically take, like, a package, like a Pirate Rogue package, and just splice it onto, like, Diggy or something like that. And so, like, you're doing a little bit of, like, the early game. Because, like, you know, you can have some really silly high rolls in the early game with, like, a Dig Rogue and then swap it to, like, instead of like a greedy top end with Tess, you're doing like a pirate top end. I could see that possibly happening, and wouldn't be shocked if it did happen. I'm not a great standard deck thinker, but like it was doing some powerful stuff. It just didn't. I don't know. I was left kind of being like, is this really it? And it felt like it was a really, for a deck that's just like you expected to just sort of be type in pirate and like autofill. I liked some versions of the deck that I saw other people playing, and I was just like, oh, we should add some of those cards. But then I like you'd sit down to kind of refine the deck, and you're like, but what are we really cutting? Like, this is really tough.
Yeah. And I'm really not sure. Someone who has a more standard focused eye towards deck building may be able to get there. I've built some standard decks in my day, but this one just isn't really my play pattern, especially awkward, because I want to play it a different way.
More
than anything else.
100%.
So then we shifted over to Rainbow Death Knight, and we played two games of Rainbow DK and went 50%. And it felt pretty good. It
felt okay, yeah.
Yeah. I'm trying to recall the game that we lost.
Corp.
Corp. That's right. Enough said. Like, Corp beating us.
You queued into Corbett. You died.
Yeah. These things happen.
It was also doing like a hand buffy rainbowy thing, and also had the funny new quill boar. And it was funny because I was trying to communicate with him a little bit on stream to see if he wanted to do some, like, you know, some wild stuff kind of at the very end. We didn't end up being able to do that, which, like, kind of made sense because later Corp kind of like announced he was going to be retired from streaming for a while. So, like, he probably wasn't in the mood to play any wild. I don't blame him. But yeah, so I'm in stream and I'm watching his reaction to you guys playing cards because, like, you know, you guys were goofing around, so I was joking you guys were hazing me. And it's just like, they're hazing me, they're being mean. And I wasn't telling you what was in his hand, but, like, he'd be like, he was reacting a lot to the threats you guys were producing or unable to produce with the deck. And he was like, oh, how do I deal with that? Oh, never mind, I have this. Wait, how do I deal with that? All right, well, the rabbit sticks? Okay, well, I can deal with that. How do I deal with that? And, like, you guys kind of put in down a layer of threats upon layer of threats. And he was just able to go toe-to-toe with, like, a standard version of Beast Hunter that was kind of geared a little bit more toward, let's just generate value, generate value, generate value. Let's make sticky boards. And that is kind of good into the deck that can make infinite threats. So, and even at the end, you guys tagged him for, I think, like, 22 or 25, and he had 27 health. So he was like, am I dead? No? Great, I win. So, like, it was a close game. It was still a close game. Good deck.
Yeah, I think that'll be a really fun one to play and play against, as long as you're running the Wave of Threats deck like that.
Yeah.
Then our last four games were split across two different deck archetypes. One of them, submitted by Raxius, was Raxius's Highlander Priest. And this ran the Zarimi combo, and we just didn't lose with it.
No, they were so in standard. They were kind of long, grindy games. A lot of value generation. What I thought was very interesting that I actually really liked and enjoyed. We queued up into a mirror against Pizza, which was a pleasure because it was a crazy long game. That I feel like there are some turns where Sheep was Sheep was at the controls and Sheep's roping out because they're so complicated as far as like, okay, what value are we generating? What card are we picking? What trade are we making? When are we going face? And like the hand sizes were getting tricky to manage and he was having trouble managing his hand size. We were having trouble managing our hand size. Somebody Reno's. Oh God. At one point we were like bouncing, what's the Forge Healy minion? The two mana one.
Yeah, the 2 mana 2/3
Watcher of the Sun, something like that, right? So we all know the card, right? Because we play enough of the game. I'm like, all right, we got to play this thing twice, because you're counterplaying against the fact that you know they've had enough dragons summoned that they could Zarimi at any point in time, and so it made you take some lines that are a little bit risky because I knew we were going to burn, like, well, I didn't know we were going to burn a card. I have trouble counting to 10 because, like, I was wearing socks, okay? But like, you're playing against, you're kind of playing around, like, okay, am I dead if I give them an extra turn right now? And then we'd have our Zarimi and we're like, okay, can we get them if we have our extra turn right now? And so I actually thought that was a really cool interplay, and because if it's only once, like, you can't bounce it and then do it again, and we were at full health most of the time, I thought that was a really interesting play pattern. I thought that was really cool, even though it's, like, you know, super grindy and very tense.
So those two games probably took longer than all three of, like, one of those games may have taken longer than all three of our Pirates games.
I think we got the maximum XP boost from pizza. It was like, we were there. I think we were there for at least 35 minutes. It might have been 40 or 45. Like, it was grindy. It was cool, though.
It was. And then we capped off the night going back to Embiggen, but I built a different shell of it, Embiggen Menagerie. You know, we had the, what was it, the totem that buffs?
Stereo totem and stereo party totem. Animal. And you went like a little bit, it felt like you went a little bit smaller on the curve, but like, so a little bit more mid-range. But we were getting more threats down at a time. And also with was it Rockmaster Voon, we were able to like copy a bunch in our hand and then drop those. And it was like, I don't know.
And we went 2-0 with that one as well. And I think that one may be my preferred version of the two, but like, it's close. They're both really good.
Yeah.
At the very least in a theory crafting situation.
I wouldn't hate it if it was a real deck. I wouldn't say it's a terribly difficult deck to pilot, but at the same time, knowing when to meter out your threats and when you're going to apply pressure, I think was, and like what clears you're playing around was important. But if it is good, it wouldn't shock me if it's something that does become popular because it's accessible.
Yeah, and it felt really good to, like, you know, play the one drop Quillbore into Party Animal, which then buffed our Steam Guardian, which then drew our Embiggen / Black Rock and Roll, which then we could just keep on building and building and building and building. And
yeah,
if our board gets dealt with, that's cool, because we're not necessarily just building what's on board. We're building what's in our hand and what's in our deck. So it's kind of like snowbally in that way, not necessarily just what's on board, but what I'm doing is having like a lasting effect throughout the entire game, which is a play pattern that I really like as like a hand buff enjoyer, you know?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, we were playing one card and it's just like, okay, this one card is a threat. And our opponent keeps having to play two or three cards to deal with it. And then we play our next card. Okay, this is also a threat.
Mm-hmm.
And then your opponent plays two or three cards. Eventually, we just had like insane card advantage where it's just like, well, we don't always have the mana to get all these big boys out. But opponents gassed out. Like, it doesn't really matter. Which is cool. It was very satisfying in a Timmy way. And there was even some cute synergy where, like, we'd have, like, you know, one of the forgotten animatronic or something like that.
Yeah.
The mech that would destroy something that has less attack than you. And you would play, like, an unbuffed... you'd have it buffed one of those. And you have an unbuffed... testing dummy, and you throw that down and it would just eat it and then like shoot 8 damage face, and that's how you get lethal, and you're just sitting there going hee hee hee. It was very satisfying to play.
And I think that was our last game is how we ended it. Like, we had lethal on board, but we played the unbuffed stereo, or not stereo totem, a testing dummy to do it just for the giggles, because we could. That was the only thing that was lower than it. We weren't facing down a board, so we just...
It's good stuff. It's good stuff.
So those plus the whiz bang, which we talked about, even though it's not pictured on our graphic here. I was about to say all we got to play. We played for 6 hours. We played for the entire
6 hours.
Yeah. And so overall, I did not include the whiz bang ones in here because, again, HSR just didn't capture it well. And I didn't go back through the 6 hour VOD to capture those. But we overall went 15-8 with the constructed decks that we played, which is a 65.2% win rate. And you know what? Would have been even better if we didn't play Pirate Rogue.
It's not, you know, isn't, not to be toxic, isn't that a little bit low for Wild?
But we were playing in Standard.
Oh, good point. The number of times we just went face, we were just like, we were playing, we're just like, but what if we just go face? So they could do anything. Yeah, but like, what if we just go and went face? And like all three of us are thinking about it. We're like, yeah, we'll just go face. Yes,
we'll just go face.
No, that's true. You do put people on a clock at some point, because there wasn't a lot of healing in the meta, it didn't feel like. So like you put someone mm-hmm. down low enough and you're up by 25 health, it's really tough for them to swing it.
So theory crafting was a blast. Even though we only played standard, we still had a kick and rad time and had some pretty wild experiences in the format. So the 10-year celebration stuff and patch rolled out. So we've got patch 29.0 came out. This was what, last Monday? No, this Monday. Yep. This Monday.
But this Monday, yeah. Yeah.
So, of course, there was a community day. That was Hearthstone's 10th year anniversary.
Oh, yeah. We got crazy drops for that. That was cool.
Yeah. And then they announced the theory crafting streams and stuff like that. Well, not just announced it, but formally put those in the patch notes. They reminded everybody of the new core cards. And here's where we start getting wild relevant. Card adjustments.
Yes.
So we had some nerf reversions, you know, and in standard, we call this the Franken meta, where some cards that are rotating to wild get their nerfs reverted. And standard is wacky, happy, fun times before those cards rotate. And then standard's playing with a whole new all of the things. And there's a pretty lengthy list here. We're not going to run through all of them because, you know, not all of them are going to be particularly impactful for our format. But there are a few that are already making a pretty big impact. Shmoopy Daddy, do you want to tell us about those three cards?
Sure. We sort of decided we were going to highlight three of them specifically because I think these are the ones that have sort of changed my experience the most. And I think we have to sort of start at the one we have listed last on the document. I think we have to start mm-hmm. with Prince Renathal. adding the 5 health back, I am told, is turning the upper echelon of competitiveness in wild into somewhat of a hellscape a little bit. Some of the slow decks that really feast on it, like Quest Mage or some types of Druid, are abusing it and they're getting away with it. And you're seeing, like, you know, the giant Tech W Reno piles that people hate playing against. But as far as what I'm sort of seeing at my MMR, he's been fair. He's been fun. He's allowed for a lot of decks that are suboptimal or not good to be a little bit more competitive. And, like, there's a reason why this is, I think this is correct. Isn't Prince Renathal the most popular card in Hearthstone? And, like, isn't it, like, not close? You know, this guy's definitely having an impact on the meta. He's definitely slowing it down. Aggro's still fine. Aggro's still good. I think people who are hyperventilating saying aggro isn't playable are idiots. My wife hit Legend with Even Shaman yesterday. Nope, no problems there. Shadow Priest is going to get knocked down a peg a little bit, but, like, you're still going to die on turn 3 or 4 sometimes. They're still going to have double Mind Blast, and for whatever reason, maybe they're having a tough time counting on their fingers and toes, they're slow rolling it against you. I think we're at a decent spot right now, at least from what I've seen, where aggro and control are both having their say, with combo sort of actually having a tough time figuring out where it wants to be. Mm-hmm. Sheep, have you tried playing Mind Rogue post-Renathal?
I have not, but Mind Rogue could pretty consistently deal 35 pretty early. The additional 5 damage
doesn't like
is a
40.
Little hard to find.
Somebody gave me Mind Rogue, and I'm looking at on my stream, and I'm playing it, and I'm looking at it, and I'm like, wait, I'm not going to get there. And they were disrupting me just enough. They were breaking my weapon before I wanted my weapon broken. They were causing delays through mm-hmm. like Speaker Stomper or Neophyte or something. Or, and they were like ratting one of my mines before I had graveyard up. And I still had like some of the combo, but they lived through it. And it's like, you know, one of those moments is just like, oh yeah, Mine Rogue's a lot worse. Well, that's good for Wild. Sorry, sheep. Alex Rogue wants to deal 32. 40 is kind of tough. Like, you got to take a different line. Mm-hmm. You got to take a potion line, and you got to refill, and then you got to do it kind of over two turns. So like the big combo decks, I guess, you know, Quest Mage is Quest Mage. So like that's, I guess, your type of combo deck right now. But combo, a lot of the combo decks that we think about are kind of taking a step back because of Renathal. And so that's interesting to see too.
Circling back to when you said that aggro is also having its day. You know, Anchorman, who gave us one of the decks that we played in the Theory Crafting stream, tweeted, just earlier today, saying that he was kind of grumpy, I'm paraphrasing, by the meta. So he thought that bashing some heads in would help. Shout outs to me for the list. Oh, what deck is this, you may ask? Oh, it's aggro druid. Oh, it is very much aggro druid. You've got your Embiggen, you've got your patches, you've got your parachute brigand, you've got the trog that makes an extra trog.
Iron Deep Trog, sure, yep.
Iron Deep Trog, and so you go wide, you buff stuff up from your hand, you buff stuff up on your board, and you just bash some faces in. And, you know, you've got the consistency. The whole point of the deck is to be consistent and just get there before they can find their answers. And whenever they have 40 cards, it's a lot harder to find their early answers early.
Yeah.
Funny thing, Matt.
That's the thing. It's like, especially if you're like a giant 40-card Reno pile. It's like you're not always finding your yellow cards. It's frustrating when they do, but you're just sometimes they just roll over. And like I've played some games on the stream this week where I'm like, it's at 6 mana. What is in your, you have 8 cards in hand. What is in your hand right now? Like why does none of your hand have text? And so that does sometimes happen sometimes where like people are just not, the deck's not built properly and you like you have 10 too many cards and like, you know, you can punish people for that. So that's pretty cool for now. I think it's okay. I think it's a good balance of anti-aggro and giving control a leg up because the format is destined to fast combo and hyper aggro being the ones that are out on top. So giving it a little bit, even if this is a bad idea in the short term, I think in the long term, I think it's still okay.
And however much I dislike agreeing with that, I agree with that. I mean, having a speed bump on the just wicked fast, hyper aggro, hyper combo is probably healthy.
Yeah. So we're not all playing like, you know, Pirate Rogue versus Mine Rogue and like somebody's done on turn 5. Right, or somebody's done on turn 3. Just having that is okay for me. Let's go to the next card that I think is it makes a significant impact on Wild, even if you don't necessarily run it in your deck. Can we flip to Wild Growth?
Yeah, Wild Growth. So Wild Growth has gone from 3 mana down to 2.
This was, I think, my first balance patch that I remember. I was like, whoa, they changed cards in this game? And I forget if it was this one and like also Milbane, like they Leeching Poison also got nerfed.
Yeah.
Was that the same patch? I don't know. I remember those two being very close to each other. Because I play Wild and somebody would play Wild Growth and I'd be like, how do I beat Druids? Druid seems impossible. Well, now we have copies of Wild Growth that are better than Wild Growth. We got that choose one, Invigorate, right?
I can never remember what it's called, but it's the Caverns card.
The
right?
Caverns card. It's just strictly better than a two mana Wild Growth. So like, yeah, some Druids play, you know, run Wild Growth main deck. That's fine, but in a land full of, you know, extra large 40 card Highlander greed piles. You're much more likely to run into Wild Growth from Zephyrus. And Zephyrus now, if you start with the coin, will offer Wild Growth if you coin a mount. So coin a mount on one, make your Bloodfin Raptor, and follow that up with a Wild Growth on two. And all of a sudden you're playing a 4-drop on turn 3, and that's a whole lot better into aggro than something like, I don't know, then Zephyrus on 2, Wild Growth on turn 3, 5 drop maybe on turn 4. Like, it's just a lot more proactive, and it speeds up those decks a lot. So I think this is going to make a significant impact on Wild in the long term.
It is, in fact, our growth.
And they keep buffing Zeph. Yeah. They keep buffing these old cards. Swipe is a 3-mana card now. They keep buffing slowly but surely some of these old cards, these legacy set cards that Zeph can access. And because they can enter these cards to access them, yeah, he's just going to keep getting better. And he costs 2 mana, so we're going to play him forever. So I think that's something that we're going to have to keep an eye on. Let's look at our last one that I think is significant for sure from the patch.
Yeah. And that is From the Depths.
Sure.
Before the reversion, it was a 3-mana warrior spell. Reduce the cost of the bottom 5 cards in your deck by 2, then dredge. The reversion discounts them by 3.
Yep. The original form. What was funny was initially they had this as a... They nerfed this to a 4-mana card, but the 3-mana discount. And then in a patch, they said they were going to buff it, right? They did the red and green circle day, and they said they were going to buff it. And Warrior Bros were like, oh, yeah, we're getting our card buffed. But if you play Dead Man's Hand Warrior, you were really counting on that 3-mana reduction to make your Cold Light, your Cold Light Oracle 0 so that you could do this infinite mill combo, which I'm still not 100% big brain enough to figure it out, and I don't know if I will because it's Dead Man's Hand. I could just win with Odin Warrior, but whatever. And then they buffed it to, they gave it 1 less mana, 3 mana less. It's now a 3-mana, but it only discounted things by 2, and Wild Warrior Bros were absolutely livid by it. Well, now it's back to its original form, 3-mana discount things in your deck by 3. This makes Skipper Warrior that I like to play a lot better. If I high roll Odin, I can play him on 5. That seems pretty good. If you play Gauntlet Warrior, it makes all the pieces in your deck 0, like it already kind of did. But at the same time, like if you, let's say, were running Alkali of Pain, or if you were running Aftershocks, it making some of the higher cost cards in your deck cost a little bit less. Every mana counts. This thing's disgusting. This long term looks like, if you're talking about a class that's not traditionally built around mana cheats, I would keep an eye on From the Depths, because somebody, when they first nerfed it to 4, somebody say, oh, you just put it in Even Warrior. No, but you can't actually access all the cards that you've just mana cheated because you can't run Finley. But I think we're going to be running Finley. What is it? What's his name? The which version Finley? The one from Sunken City? Super Sea Guide. There you go. And so, like, you cast Finn from the Depths, you chuck Spinley out there, we get a bunch of mana-reduced stuff in your hand, you cackle maniacally as you make plays with 0 mana, and your opponent weeps. I think this is going to be, especially in a class, like I said, like Warrior, that's not necessarily balanced around mana cheat. We shouldn't be playing Odin on 5. Keep an eye out for that. Like, long-term... If we keep seeing these little mana cheat initiatives kind of like strung in, From the Depths is going to be sort of the linchpin of that, or at least a harbinger of what could be and how goofy Warrior could actually get. Do we want to talk about just community thoughts on the nerfs in general real quick?
Yeah, I think that's a good idea. So the nerfs were seen a little bit conservatively. And there were some things that were nerfed that didn't get reverted because of the kind of conservative approach to the reversions. How would you explain the reaction, Shmoopy Daddy?
Well, it was kind of like the analogy I like to use is this time of year is Wild Christmas, right? Like we get back all our old toys and we're super happy and like, oh, man, I missed this. I missed that. And there are things on people's wish list. People wanted some form of the rogue location back.
No.
two mana, no stealth. You can interact with them at least. Kind of spooky.
Still spooky.
Sire Denathrius.
I'd be okay with a Sire Denathrius revert, but I understand the hesitation to do that thing as well.
Minion Kael'thas.
I don't think that would really be a big deal to me.
The Jailer.
No. Keep him jailed.
You'd keep him jailed?
Uh-huh.
I think the Jailer's fine. I think the only class that can really abuse him is Druid, and Druid has other things they can do.
Fair.
There, which is, I think, the same thing with like Denathrius. It's just like, well, like, you know, well, you know, I think that's like future proofing, but the only deck that can really take advantage of Sire Denathrius would have been Druid, and Druid has Astalor. Like, it doesn't need Sire Denathrius to do disgusting things. Sinful Brand, Demon Hunter.
Yeah, I'm not really too worried about that one either.
You could unnerf that, possibly. I know people were excited about playing that. You know, just the assorted parts of the community were just sort of up. Shock Spitter. Hunter Bros were really happy for Shock Spitter. We're really hoping for Shock Spitter. At four, it's just too slow for Wild. Three, it's probably okay. Two, I think we can all agree it's a little bit degenerate, but at the same time, it's Hunter. So, like, eh. Could probably get away with it being two in Hunter, and like nobody would bat an eye, because you'd have to build the entire deck around it, and it's a little bit goofy. So like, you know, this is typically like Wild Christmas is the way that I think we kind of all kind of look at it, where it's just like, oh man, let's get all this really cool stuff back. And instead of getting all that really cool stuff back, it's like you open the box and you get like a McDonald's toy. And don't get me wrong, the three, like, it's okay. Like, you can use your imagination and stuff, but, like, it wasn't what was on your list. And the three cards that we highlighted are plenty powerful for Wild and are already making an impact on the meta, right? But there's a whole list of others that are, like, cool or decent. Like, the DK reverts, like, that's great, but, like, that's not really stuff that's going to shake it up or be spicy in Wild. And if you allow me, Sheep, I have a theory on why they decided to take this particular tact.
Ooh, yes, please.
My personal theory is that the developer team right now hasn't been this small or this stressed or this pressed in a long, long time. I was counting at least like five balls that were up in the air at the time. One would be obviously getting the Theorycraft stuff ready to go. Another would be getting the patch actually physically out and operational. Another being, I forget if it was a new release, the set cards. Reverts are on there. Yeah, make sure Twistcoat rolls out without a hitch. And I imagine there's work to do every day to make sure that that is not as scuffed as it was on launch. And when you start going down, and not to mention, also there's the 10th anniversary stuff that we see. We see the confetti coming down on the client, but like, we don't want the confetti to appear and then we get a blue screen of death. Like, there's stuff that they have to make sure is going well. And it's kind of like a high pressure situation, because like, if it doesn't go well, I mean, they just merged with Microsoft. A bunch of people just got laid off. Who's to say that like more heads might not roll if things don't go well? What's the one place where the devs can kind of control their workload and it's not critical? It's not mission critical. It's a service that they do. It's the reverts for Wild. And we didn't always get reverts for Wild. People, I think, sometimes forget that. Like, this is kind of a courtesy that they do to our community to allow some of the cards to have a chance of being playable in our format again. And so, like, I think they went real conservative on a lot of these reverts, because they basically said, well, I never want to see the Jailer again. I never want to see Thaddeus again. I never want to have to think about Sire Denathrius ever again. And so instead of, you know, taking some chances, they didn't. And that's kind of okay. But some people in the community are definitely disappointed. Like, I understand if that was the reasoning, and I get that. But I'd be lying if I said I wasn't disappointed by some of the cards that didn't make the cut, because I was looking forward to some things.
Yeah, and I think on the other side of that possibility is what happened, what was it, last year, year before last, with Kael'thas.
Oh, yeah.
They unnerfed Kael'thas. I mean, I feel like as engaged Wild players, we were like, oh, that's a bad idea. But they took a chance with that.
Oh, yeah. They're like, we're going to see how this goes. And we lost 2 weeks of an expansion because it was just, you know, it was all, and it was so weird was it was Kael'thas and it was Switcheroo at the same time.
Right. That's right. Yeah, it was both of those. Speaking of, we did get Switcheroo back. It's now 5 mana instead of 3.
I haven't seen the combo once. The combo's still there. But it's so much slower. Tome Tampering. Yeah. Tome Tampering is now a 6 mana card. So, you can do some funny, silly, degenerate stuff, but it's going to take a long time for you to get to that point where you can do it.
And the deck that does that wants to, go fast and throw their hand at your face and then, draw more cards. And 3 mana? Yeah, you could, Imp on 1, Coin Tampering on 2. You could, be real, hesitant about it. And on turn 4, Imp Tome Tampering. Now Tome Tampering being 6, it's not really an issue.
Yeah, you just play it in Mechathune. And Mechathune Warlock when we could still do that, right? Like, you can make your Mechathune cost 1, which was an advantage. A little bit of an advantage.
a little bit.
Poquito advantage. I think they did an okay job of a lot of the... from what I've seen, Switcheroo has not bullied anyone from what I've seen. They went real conservative with the reverts. I think they didn't want anything to break wild. And I don't think they could afford to have anything break wild right now. I think it's just they have too many things going on. They have other problems, and wild would be sitting at the back of the queue for a long time. So better off just letting us sit there. And if we want to throw our toys out of the pram, we can throw our toys out of the pram and be upset we didn't get all the reverts that we wanted. But I think that's the reality of things. What do you think, Sheep? What was your take on the reverts?
I think that a lot of the things that that didn't get reverted were some of the more combo enablers and would have kind of done the opposite that the Renathal revert did. It would have sped up the format even further. Shockspitter Hunter is a prime example of that, right? Whereas Renathal, which they did revert, slows it down a little bit, gives us a little bit of a speed bump rather than putting our foot on the gas. So whether it was due to just trying to not break wild or whether it was due to wanting to put a little bit of a speed bump so that we can continue to print more flashy, exciting cards in subsequent sets and not completely break wild as easily there. So whether it was just not wanting to have to fix it in a week or less or wanting to kind of future-proof wild in general, I'm not too particularly bothered by some of the nerfs that didn't happen or the nerf reversions that didn't happen. There were some that I was thinking we would get back that we didn't. And I'm kind of okay with that too.
It's not like they can't revisit them.
We got a lot. they can still revert additional nerfs later, but some of the ones that we didn't highlight that I think could see play are Nightcloak Sanctum, the mage location. That's really good. School Teacher back to a 5/4. Vile Library, if we continue getting imps,
it was silly, wasn't it?
Yeah. In our format, that was silly. Faithful Companions, having the big double King Crush from your deck.
Okay, yeah. Yeah.
That could be impactful. All of the not wild spirits, the wild seeds.
All the wild seeds, yeah. Then they are playable. I've seen a lot of people play them. They are playable. Mm-hmm. Which is good because they were never busted in wild. They were just very good. Right. And then they got way less good. And that was sad.
So I feel like while we highlighted the ones that have the biggest impact, I think that there are some other cards that are going to be straight up playable. If not good, once we have more time to kind of marinate on it. So I don't think that, you know, we got nothing. Scribbling Stenographer is another one for
yeah.
Miracle
yeah.
Rogue
enjoyers. And we didn't highlight that because I haven't seen a lot of it. I don't know if Miracle Rogue is really a deck that's people are attempting right now, but yeah, that's one that they get back. That's one they get back.
But none of those are the like OP cards that we highlighted, obviously.
Which is one thing I do want to bring up, especially when you talk about Thaddeus, the Jailer,
yeah.
Sire Denathrius are ones that come to my mind. They told us, it feels like it must have been like a couple years ago or a year or so ago, they said that they're going to start printing more cards that end the game, like high value cards that end the game. If they continue to do that and then subsequently nerf these cards, and then subsequently after that, not revert these cards, is that a play pattern you're going to be okay with? Like, to me, a certain part of it bothers me. If we're going to, or Yogg-Saron Unleashed, if we're going to print Yogg-Saron Unleashed, if we are going to make metas unreasonable or untenable in some cases for weeks at a time, only to revisit it and then nerf them and then never revisit them ever again. Is that something that we have an appetite for?
And I think it kind of depends on the card, truthfully. Like, we got Renathal back, right? I think what Mimnark says in the chat is a really good way of explaining it, and that's expensive minions that in the game are too good in Druid, IMO. And he further goes on to explain that with Renathal, it only really exasperates the problem. And I think that is true, especially in conjunction with the rules change that we just got, be it for the way that we are operating with now or the way that having multiple different options, you can build Renathal, you can have multiple of these different payoffs for having 10 mana. And then it doesn't matter which one you draw because you can draw one of them because you're just getting mana ramp or climb, temporary addition, or your finisher, and it you're basically running it 50-50.
I guess just something that does bother me is we have a card right now in Reno Lone Ranger, which I've been vocal about, certainly on my own stream. I don't know if I've been as vocal on here, but I think the card does too much, right? And I think the only reason the card hasn't been touched yet is it was the premier card for the set for the last 4 months. And I think it's a great candidate in the next couple weeks. If Reno Lone Ranger is still a huge card in Standard and it dominates the Standard meta, or people are still playing Flat Earth decks, I think it does get touched in some way. But I remember Martian Boo saying something like, yeah, but like, I don't know if I can even learn to enjoy a card like this because it's going to be in its form for a short period of time and then never again. Possibly never again, where like they'll never go back and touch it. And now they've been very, very aggressive with their reverts, especially recently, touching some cards we thought they'd never change. Caverns Below being, I think, one of them that like people were absolutely shocked that they had went back and were just like, oh yeah, we're gonna try Caverns Below, and we're like, I don't know about Caverns Below. I know part of it does bother me that they are designing these things to be these huge, swingy, out of control bombs, even in wild, and then only with the intention that they're just going to nerf it later. It just feels kind of lame to me. And I get that, like, you know, this game has to make money and this game has to generate hype, and having cards like that do that, especially for the casual players, right? Especially like we're not necessarily the people that they're trying to sell these cards on, right? Like, these cards are big flashy things that you can do at like silver 10, and like your opponent's like, whoa, that was so cool, or man, I'm so glad I got to save up my 1600 dust and craft this card. But it does leave me unsettled a little bit. It does leave me unsettled a little bit, which I guess is where I'll leave my final gripe.
Yeah, and I can understand where you're coming from there. I think that the an example of that to the nth degree is taken from a very different game. And that's Marvel Snap. Marvel Snap, releases one card a week, and they will print a card to essentially like either fix the mistakes of one card, the card that they just printed, or they'll just nerf it immediately. And cards in Marvel Snap are like 50 plus bucks a pop, each individual card. And it very much there is just like, sell the card. Okay, we sold the card. Now we can nerf the card. Okay, now sell this next card. Oh, that wasn't good. We can buff it. Okay, now it's good. Now we can nerf the card. Like, from someone who no longer plays Marvel Snap, that's kind of
icky.
Yeah. It seems kind of predatory to me, truthfully. And I don't think that Hearthstone is at all there now. We've had Reno Lone Ranger for
Badlands. Last expansion.
that was Badlands? Oh. We've had Reno Lone Ranger for 4 months. They haven't nerfed it, and they've nerfed other powerful things that were power outliers that they, weren't expecting. They wanted Reno Lone Ranger to be that exciting card that you aspire to. And if they do eventually nerf it, I think it'll be because it continues to be a power outlier, and I think that it probably will be. But I'm glad that they kind of are taking the chance on it, and it's not like they're just like, there it is. Oh, we sold enough packs. Now let's immediately nerf it, which is kind of how it feels like Marvel Snap does.
But it does feel like that with the mini set cards sometimes, because again, Jailer was a mini set card. Yogg Unleashed is a mini set card. And these are not cards that are necessarily tied to the expansion theme strongly. Right. So they are much more likely to go and touch those cards. Now, I mean, Thaddeus had his own problem. They nerfed him once. They arguably buffed him. They've really made sure he's freaking dead this time. Good. Good, by the way. I'm okay with that. But just I don't know. It's just the recurring theme. But you mentioned a rules change that they made recently that is interesting and does have implications for Wild in a goofy way.
Significantly so. And that rules change is... Let's see, we already mentioned you can have multiple the same sigil, objective, or aura in play. Ah, here it is. The most impactful thing for Wild. Like card decks and hero skins, you are now able to favorite more than one coin. Decks can now use a random favorite coin or a random own coin, or you can put in a specific coin. This has been something I've been on my soapbox about for as long as I can remember, since we could actually pick the coins, and now we can actually do it. This is not the rules change that we were talking about earlier, but I really wanted to derail us because I absolutely love this change, and I am so excited that I can do this thing now. And I've been playing with more than just cat coin because I can select it per deck and not just like, well, I'm not going to change my favorite away from cat coin. So, oh, well,
I've been instructed. I have to tell sheep to touch grass at some point. Sheep, go touch grass. Oh, you have grass. Of course you do. Of course you have sod or fakes.
I didn't have to go far.
Ba-dum-tsh. All right.
Yeah, all right. It's turf.
Perfect. Perfect.
So the rules change we were actually talking about is that temporary mana, such as from the coin or innervate, or Floop's Glorious Glue, can now make you go above max mana. This applies to the base max mana of 10 and to any modified max mana, like if you've played Wild Heart Guff or Audio Amplifier. The deck that is very quickly taking over the Wild Ladder plays neither of those two cards because it doesn't need to. Tell me a little bit about that deck, Shmoopy Daddy.
Sure, so this is... This is basically like Auctioneer Druid, if you remember the old Auctioneer Druid shell, but instead of playing Togwaggle, you just make a lot of mana. And then what you do with that mana is you play Forbidden Fruit and you say, okay, turn all my mana into attack. And then you go face. And the specific sequence of events that will get you this is, like, you know, you're playing all your, you're playing all these little one mana token spells. You're playing your, you can play Barnes, so you can pop off on turn five to get this going. You get a bunch of mana with Lightning Bloom and Innervate, and you have your one mana Auctioneer out. And you're cruising through your deck. And you get lethal with Solar Gloop, Seeds, Solar Eclipse, Seeds, play Forbidden Fruit. If your opponent has a bunch of minions on board, you're going to get a bunch of mana from that. You're going to get a bunch of mana from your own board. Again, every time you destroy a minion, you're going to get a mana crystal. You're going to go above 10. The maximum that we have in this screenshot right here, that EPT Hopper, formerly of Cute Lock fame, who saw this deck idea actually at 9x and was like, let me cook that. Let me see if I can make that better. Has him dealing 83 attack to his opponent on the other side, which who looks like it's an even shaman. So, and I can't tell what turn he popped off at. It looks like maybe turn five, because I think he played Bioproject twice, or no, maybe it's turn four. Possibly turn four, because he's at eight mana, but if you play Bioproject twice, that would put you six, four. I think he popped off on turn four. And so this might finally spell the end for Floop's Glorious Gloop. I know other content creators are concerned about this. This rule change, which is apparently meant to make it more intuitive, right? Like, people have been trying to coin out a freezing trapped dragon with 10 mana for ages now, and this just makes it more intuitive and easier to access, and you don't have to learn that lesson the hard way. We've also got Mana Biscuit in our format, and Romath, which recasts Mana Biscuits, so Quest Mage gets a little bit of a buff. Yay. That's what everybody asked for. Get some temporary mana above 10 mana. But this is right now the most immediate and flashy one that we see as far as decks that could be good. And I sort of heard about this deck starting Tuesday, and there's been rumbling that it's getting better. And now I'm hearing today that, well, one person in Corb's Discord is just like, well, it's all I'm facing on ladder. People are trying it out. And whether it's good or not, I've tried it on stream a little bit. It's not APM intensive. Once you get the series of events that you're, once you get the series of operations that you're supposed to run, like, I scuffed the combo two or three times, mostly off the back of lack of reps. But it's not terribly complicated. You just sort of play your green cards, and then when you're done playing your green cards, you play your fruit. The rope was burning for me, but, like, I'm playing on computer, and, you know, I'm 35 years old. My fast twitch muscle ain't what it's supposed to be anymore. Was not hard to do. Did not need to APM cheat at all. So that means that this is probably pretty accessible, which means that people are probably going to play it, which means ew. Sheep, do you have any thoughts?
Ew.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, we also got Amulet, right? We also got Amulet, that three mana spell that allows us to tutor a minion. So you could actually grab Barnes straight from your deck. And you heal for five, too. Neato.
Ooh. Yeah, it's... They've been doing a really good job of manipulating the max mana that we can have access to, which I think is cool. I think it makes a lot of sense to make this rule change, but we have a long history of mana manipulation in our format. And so far, at least, I think that Floop's Glorious Gloop is the only one that's, like, breaking it. So I can see that kind of being nudged. And then now that they've made this rules change, they're not going to print new ones that actually, you know, take advantage of that or do that to the nth degree like we are now, hopefully.
I think they will. I mean, I think
not to this extent, not to this extent, I don't think.
Okay. Maybe not another gloop, but, like, I don't know. Like, they don't consider wild in any of their card making. They don't.
No.
They just don't. they'd fix things in post, which, and they've been fairly consistent about fixing things in post, but you know, it's like, it's not always to everybody's satisfaction, which is why we have still have things like Mind Rogue, like, but some people like playing Mind Rogue. Blah, blah, blah. Anyway, like we will get new cards that will push us over 10 mana.
Push us over 10 mana. Yes.
And while those will be easier to play, I think, than their standard counterparts, and we'll have more degenerate things to do with them. We just, by the nature of
absolutely.
The
and I completely agree with that. But now that the rules changed, and like you said, they balance for standard. So they're not going to print something in standard that's going to give someone 83 mana in a turn to then be able to Forbidden Fruit smack face for 83. Now we have additional tools to take advantage of some things that are not intended interactions.
Yeah, I wouldn't make that bet.
But... I mean, in the entire history of Hearthstone, so far we've only gotten Floops Gloop that lets us do this, right? That yeah. I can think of.
Well, again, I want to see more of... I haven't played enough Quest Mage to know like how gross is Romath that replays biscuits that go over 10 mana, or replays biscuits and coins that go over 10 mana. I haven't... Usually if they're playing Romath, they've already won. So like, I don't know if it really matters all that much, but I was just like, this is very much a, like, for like one line in a patch notes that changes a seemingly small thing for standard. I thought it would be criminal if we didn't highlight it this week, because this is,
oh.
And I know you felt the same yeah. way. This can be a huge change for Wild, especially because they're not really balancing around Wild and how they print some of these cards and how they come out and how they're used is not necessarily prepared for this sort of thing. Like, I don't think the devs are considering the fact that you could get 83 mana in Wild. And the high score I heard of was like 85, 84.
All to say, I'm very excited that I can now choose to randomly put in a different coin, and I can still leave Cat Coin as my favorite.
That is nice. I have a bunch. You know what? I went the other route. I selected all of them. Most of them. I have selected most of them, and I have it on random.
Mm-hmm.
So now every game's a different coin, which I think is really cool, because there's some that I forgot about that I was just like, oh, I really like this one. But like, I also want to use the other ones. So now I get to use all of them.
Well, whenever I'm making a deck, I like to choose the hero portrait specifically, yep. and then the card back specifically. So yep. just having another tab for the
coin. You like
coin,
accessorizing.
It's exactly what I wanted to do.
Yeah. You like playing dress up with your decks.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm.
Can I ask you some advice?
Unrelated advice with Electric Sheep City.
Yay! All right, well, Sheep, I told you earlier this episode, at your behest, I told you that you should go touch grass.
Mm-hmm.
But now you've officially touched more grass than I've touched. So I need advice, Sheep. How do I touch grass?
So step one, this is the hardest step.
Okay.
You have to open the door to the outside of your house and step through it. You have to go outside.
I didn't know that opened, Sheep. What do you
mean? It does.
Really?
So first you unlock it.
Okay.
You unlock the multiple locks that I'm sure you have.
I think I think this might be the hardest step, because this might be actively it keeping is. Me in my house.
Right.
Okay.
And then you turn the handle.
Clockwise or counterclockwise?
Dealer's choice. I typically go clockwise.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And you open the door.
Uh-huh.
And you walk through the door. But that's when you get to start scoping out and seeing where that grass may be. And that, my friend, is when you get to hunt it down. Once you find it, examine it. Examine it with your fingers. You touch the grass.
Wiser words were never spoken. And you heard that on
Bore to be wild.
You have to touch it with your fingers. It's important.